Now let's turn to the Word as Bill Houston presents this study that is meet in due season on the Higher Ground Radio Revival.
Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people. Let the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world and all things that come forth of it. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and His fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood. And all the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll. And all their hosts shall fall down, as the leaf falleth from off the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Idumea, and upon the people of my curse to judgment. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, and with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For the Lord hath a sacrifice in Bozrah, and a great slaughter in the land of Idumea. And the unicorn shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls. And their land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. For it is the day of the Lord's vengeance, and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. And the streams thereof shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. It shall not be quenched, night nor day. The smoke thereof shall go up forever. From generation to generation it shall lie waste. None shall pass through it forever and forever. Isaiah 34, 1 to 10. Welcome, my friends, to Higher Ground. Shalom. Gloria a Dios. Today, as we share with you on our continuing series, One Nation Under God, our title is The Myths That Could Destroy America. May the God of all wisdom and knowledge and understanding grant to us today that we might be able to receive what the Spirit is saying unto the church and to this nation in this hour of peril. Whatever is legal is moral. At the war crimes in Nuremberg, Germany, Hitler's henchmen argued that they had broken no laws. Germany's own legal system, they contended, permitted the elimination of those who impeded the advance of the Third Reich. Adolf Eichmann protested before his execution, "I had to obey the laws of war and my flag." In our own country, a group of protesting an abortion clinic were charged with slander because they had called abortionists murderers. The abortionists argued, as had the accused at Nuremberg, "You can't call someone who isn't breaking a law a murderer." Both the experience of Nuremberg and today's silent Holocaust in our abortion clinics bear eloquent witness to the fact that when a state believes it is accountable to no one except itself, it assumes a hidden premise that whatever is legal is moral. Robert H. Jackson, chief counsel for the United States in the Nuremberg trials, was forced to appeal to permanent values, to moral standards transcending the lifestyles of a particular society. In effect, he argued that there is a law beyond the law that stood in judgment on the arbitrary changing opinions of men. Today, the shape of America is being altered by the use of the same strategy. The Supreme Court, influenced by the humanistic trends, has helped to brainwash our people to believe that whatever is legal is moral. They would argue that there is no law above human laws, my friend. This is not the case of our founding fathers. Whether individually Christian or not, there was a general consensus of theism, the belief that God existed. And the new republic was based upon this foundation. This understanding profoundly influenced their view of law and government. As the Christian worldview has faded, America has turned not to the laws of God, but to what Francis Schaeffer called sociological law. Law is only what the majority wants, or what the judge says it is. Thus, in 1973, my friend, the Supreme Court invalidated the abortion laws of 50 states and legalized abortion on demand. Where did the court get the notion that a woman has a right to an abortion? Such right is not found in the Constitution, my friend. The court made it up. Like Napoleon, it crowned itself emperor, answerable to no one, not even the American people. Such distortion of rights has also opened the doors to pornography under the guise of a free press and to the offense of the public at large. As Christians, we must explode the myth that whatever is legal is moral. What men make legal is not necessarily moral. Morality cannot be legislated is another myth. Secular humanists would like us to believe that they are broad-minded, pluralistic, and neutral in moral matters. They are opposed to censorship, sectarianism, and intolerance. The media has done a successful job of getting the American people to believe that it is the so-called right-wing religious fanatics who are seeking to impose their morality on society. But all laws are an imposition of someone's morality, my friend. That is why the statement, "You cannot legislate morality as it stands," is absurd. Secular humanism is imposing its own morality on the American public. It does so through the media, the schools, and the courts. There's a clear intent to keep Christian thinking out of the mainstream of the media and the nation's political life. When Francis Schaeffer's film, Whatever Happened to the Human Race, was shown on a television station in Washington, pro-abortionists exerted all the influence that they could to prevent it from being aired. Liberal establishments are strangely silent, my friends, about the pluralism and open-mindedness they verbally espouse when the cause contradicts their own. Even after the showing, the Washington Post ran an article entitled, "No Matter How Moving, Show Still Propaganda." Thus, the media ridiculed the program with loaded terminology. One editor admitted that the only religious news story that the press likes to do is a scandal. When a book entitled How to Have Sex with Children was confiscated by the Chicago police, several demonstrators marched in protest, insisting that pornographers should have unlimited privileges. But neither prayer nor a creationist view is allowed in the classroom, my friends. As columnist George Will put it so ably, and it is by now a scandal beyond irony that thanks to the energetic litigation of civil liberties fanatics, pornographers enjoy expansive First Amendment protection, while first graders in a nativity play are said to violate First Amendment values. No law is neutral. Every law imposes some form of morality on society. Abortionists impose their morality on the unborn. Homosexuals want their views flaunted in the public school classrooms. Atheists want religious influence excluded from public life, my friends. Some politicians, in an attempt to remain neutral on such issues as abortion and sidestep the flak, say they are personally opposed to abortion but would never impose their values on society. If so, how does this sound? I personally would never gas a Jew, but I have no right to impose my moral judgment on the Nazis. I don't think the courts have the right to reach into someone's private gas chamber and legislate morality. The question is not whether the public will allow religion to impose its morality on America. Morality will be imposed, my friends. The real question is, whose morality will be legislated? Another myth that we want to look into: the role of men and women is interchangeable. On the surface, it may seem that every Christian should be in favor of such legislation as the ERA. If we take seriously the biblical teaching that women are created in the image of God, they certainly are entitled to equal rights. Yet behind the proposed amendment lies a deception, my friend. If ERA had been ratified, it would have brought a sweeping restructure of society with devastating attack on the family and morality in general. The amendment would likely destroy America as we know it. The radical feminists who so vociferously backed the movement want, first of all, to end the institution of marriage. Sheila Cronin speaks for many of them when she writes, "Since marriage constitutes slavery for women, it is clear that the women's movement must concentrate on attacking this institution. Freedom for women cannot be won without the abolition of marriage." These same feminists want freedom from the burden of children. There can be no equality, they insist, as long as the woman is a homemaker. Moreover, the children, they say, should be reared by another, namely the state. The Houston Conference for Women, sponsored by NOW, called for federally funded daycare centers around the clock, 7 days a week. Society as a whole, they insist, should bear the burden. Think about it, my friends. Lenin pursued this philosophy in Russia. So has Cuba and the communist China. It's a Marxist solution. The National Organization for Women opposes the right of churches to make any differentiation between men and women. The refusal to ordain homosexuals could soon be interpreted as contrary to public policy, and homosexual teachers could flaunt their lifestyle in the public classroom. Meanwhile, in an incredibly ridiculous project, even the World Council of Churches has released a biblical lectionary that omits all gender-based terms, including all references to God as He. Think about it. Both the Scriptures and the overwhelming majority of the public at large still make clear distinctions between male and female. To disregard these differences is to invite the disintegration of America and lead us to degradation, my friends. Another myth that we want to uncover. A fetus is not human. This very day, as you listen to this program, some 4,300 preborn babies will legally be put to death under the protection of the Supreme Court's 1973 decision in Roe versus Wade. In earlier days, abortion was the last act of a desperate woman. Today it is said that 97% of all abortions occur simply for convenience. It has become the nation's means of birth control. Wrote Peter Singer in Pediatrics, "We can no longer base our ethics on the idea that human beings are a special form of creation made in the image of God and singled out from all other animals. Babies' bodies have been sold by the bag. They are used in some cosmetics and for experimentation. In one general hospital, the sale of preborn babies brought in $68,000 in a 10-year period." Justice Harry Blackmun, author of the 64-page document that came from the Roe v. Wade decision, said that objection to abortion came mainly from two sources: the oath of Hippocrates and Christianity. Since the oath specifically forbids abortion, the court wrestled with its influence, but concluded that, in the context of general opinion, ancient religions did not bar abortion. As for Christianity, it was apparently dismissed by the court because of the separation of church and state. In effect, the court omitted 2,000 years of Judeo-Christian influence and reached back into paganism to find a basis for its moral judgment. Think about it, friends. Oh, how that we need to pray for America. Those who have studied the document in detail confess that it is a mix of illogical reasonings and nonsense. Inquisitor Judge Brian White dissented on the decision and said, "I find nothing in the language or the history of the Constitution to support the court's judgment." As a result of the tragic decision, more than 18 million unborn children have had their lives snuffed out, 10 times the total number of Americans lost in all of our nation's wars. Today, abortion is big business, with 1.5 million each year at an average cost of $350 each. Abortion clinics are raking in thousands of dollars daily, my friend. How could our justices have blundered so badly? The answer, they bowed to the pressure of feminists who were calling for abortion on demand as a legitimate right. It is what happened on the bench 100 years ago when the Dred Scott decision denied the black his right to freedom and relegated blacks to the status of non-persons for personal convenience. The decision was also the result of the new morality of the 60s. 75% of all those who have abortions are unmarried. Abortion has become the mopping up operation from a breakdown in moral values in this country of the United States of America, my friends. And we need to pray that God bring us back under His protection and under His moral laws. Another myth that we can't ignore. We cannot ignore the rules. Ignore the man who rules nearly one half of the world from his grave. The magnetic power of Marxism is unparalleled in history, impacting people from China to Moscow, from Cuba to Central America. Liberation theology, so popular in Latin America, has attempted to combine some elements of Marxism with Christianity in an attempt to rectify the gross inequities that exist between rich and poor, the powerful and the weak. Capitalism, as seen as the root of all evil. Marx believed that if private property were abolished, all prejudices and injustices would vanish. Incredibly, this myth is widely believed, my friends. In the United States, Sojourners Magazine, with a circulation nearing 40,000, attempts to combine Christianity with a leftist political stance. It is committed to liberation theology, both for Central America and the United States. Over a period of 6 years, it has criticized numerous countries for human rights violations, but not once was a Marxist-Leninist country named. Marxist countries are always portrayed favorably. Capitalist regimes are denounced, all the while the editors claim to be expounding biblical Christianity. It seems that a system that has annihilated millions and that continues to slaughter innocent peoples in nations like Afghanistan should be held up as an answer to human rights. When Russia, in 1983, shot down a Korean jetliner with nearly 400 people aboard, there was an outcry from the West. Those who do not understand Marxism expressed dismay that the Soviets would kill innocent passengers riding what was known to be an unarmed passenger plane. But such atrocities are in perfect accord with the Marxist notion that individuals have no inherent rights, only those conferred by the state. Those who stand in the way of the state's goals can be legally eliminated. Clearly, the ghost of Marx was present when the Supreme Court gave women an absolute right to an abortion without any interference by the father or grandparents of the child. The Roe versus Wade argument, the state has no compelling interest in the life of the unborn. Abortion was legalized because the state saw no reason to protect the life of the unborn. Marxism has failed miserably, however, in part because of its defective view of human nature. Radical feminists in this country derive much of their vision from the literature of socialism. They admit, in fact, that their goals cannot be achieved in a capitalistic society, as Lenin put it. We cannot be free if one half of the population is enslaved in the kitchen. Nor can a country be free, says communist doctrine, if parents have the right to teach their children religion. When Thomas Jefferson spoke of a wall between church and state, it was intended to prevent state religion, not the Christian view. Marxist countries place a firm wall between church and state. It is permissible to have Christian ideas, perhaps as long as these in no way spill over to the person's lifestyle in society or his views in the public arena. This is the new understanding of the separation of church and state that's being heralded in the United States of America, my friend. Another one of the myths that needs to be revealed. Pornography is a harmless adult pleasure. Our nation is drowning in a sea of sensuality with explicit sensual movies and videotapes readily available. We are rotting from the inside. One half of all divorces take place because of adultery, often encouraged by pornography, my friend. Charles H. Keating, Jr., in a report on pornography to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, reports that a recent study by the Michigan State Police using a computer to classify over 35,000 sex crimes in that state alone over a 20-year period found that 43% were pornography-related. Pornography gives a distorted view of human sexuality. It stresses the erotic without so much giving a hint as to where its path will lead. No one can calculate the number of divorces, the emotional scars, the bondage, and the guilt that pornography has brought to America. Only a massive effort on part of thousands can possibly stem the rush to judgment that this plague of pornography has brought to this country, my friends. I am thankful for the National Federation for Decency that wages the battle against pornography. Some important gains have been made. There are cities in the United States where adult bookshops have been closed because of the insistence of citizens that the laws be applied. Millions of decent citizens could, if they wished, boycott those stores where pornography is sold. Once our impact is felt, pornography could be severely restricted, my friends. The Attorney General of the United States should receive a blizzard of mail requesting the enforcement of the federal law that prohibits obscene materials from moving in interstate commerce. For many Christians, the movie theaters used to be taboo. Today's generation of Christians, by and large, regard it as neutral, a place that can show good or evil. Encouraged by such films as The Sound of Music, our generation began to select what movies it would see. But it soon became difficult to draw the line. Christians who began to attend the movies that were more risk-free would comment, "The movie was great, if only one or two of the scenes would have been cut." Offenses were tolerated, often with the excuse that it was no worse than what you can see on TV. Because of the explosive power of sexuality, that invisible line was pushed farther and farther down the path of sensuality. Young people particularly were bound to find ways to see sexually provocative movies. Once their appetite was whetted, they become addicted. Many parents lost control of the situation with their sons and daughters, then wondered why the looseness and the children's moral views and behaviors was what they were. Now with the video explosion and cable TV, everything is up for grabs. Only the people of God can arrest our slide into the cesspool of sensuality, my friends. But the question is whether we have the moral fiber to put our own house in order so that we can speak to the world. Brothers and sisters, we need to lift up our voices. We need to become the salt once again, or this nation is going down into an abscess of immorality. The myths that could destroy America have become a reality in our generation, and it's up to you and I to let our light shine and be that salt that God desires us to be. God bless you, my friends. May He use you for His glory, is my prayer in Jesus' name.
You've been listening to Higher Ground, the